Hi guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Nuggets News. Today we welcome back our head of written research, Michael, who you've seen on the channel a couple of times now, but he's been punching out all this great alpha pretty much daily for premium members as well. Today we're going to cover the coming supply shock for Ethereum, you know, the Bitcoin ETF's been performing really well. We'll talk about your theory on how that's wrapped Bitcoin for Wall Street, basically. But we're going to also cover some of the Ethereum improvement proposals that are coming along, some interoperability stuff, liquid restaking, and some of the work you're doing introducing blockchain to the Indonesian government. So welcome back, Michael.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Any thoughts before we get into those topics, just in general? We've seen Bitcoin explode again overnight, smashing into new all-time highs just in Australia now. So pretty crazy month.
Yeah, I'm struggling a little bit on the sleep because I was up late watching that. I was going to see if we were going to break all-time high last night, but we got here in Australia and about 30 other countries. But yeah, I think it's just a matter of time before that 69K gets taken out. But it actually doesn't need to be 69 because of the slight inflation in supply over the last few years, it's actually 65 would be all-time high market cap.
Yeah.
So we're not far off.
Fantastic stuff. Do you want to share your screen and we'll start running through these different topics for people at home?
Yep. I'll just pull that one. Yep, gotcha.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, far away.
Yeah, so as we talked about, we can see obviously Bitcoin has been raging and everyone's kind of been thinking, playing that game like, am I going to take profit? Am I going to wait for the pullback? And it's just kept chugging. So you've actually done a lot better just sitting and not trying to swing trade it, I think, unless you're like a pro like Kyle. But for me, I'm not a pro and I'm not a trader and I'm not a chartist. So I'm following the Rao Paul methodology here. I'm just like, don't stuff this up. Like,
yeah.
And so I think, you know, time in the market better than timing the market for most of us. And so, yeah, it's just kept on going. So we'll see where it comes to from here. But you touched on it already. Yeah. Like I think the halving has been the big checkpoint that we've always been looking for. But from now on out, it seems like that the ETF has been a bigger deal than what we anticipated. And this might be the actual start date where we measure the bull market from.
Mm.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Yeah, effectively what we have now is wrapped Bitcoin for Wall Street. So we're taking all the Bitcoin, we're putting it in a legally compliant wrapper for America. And now this is bonkers. Like you can see exactly what's going on here. You can track the inflows. And so like, you know, $500 million just again yesterday went into the BlackRock ETF. And, you know, there's only like, you know, 900 Bitcoin coming onto the market each day. And they're gobbling this up like 10 times more than what's coming onto the market.
Yeah.
And we're about to cut that in half.
Yeah. So that was probably one thing that Kyle and I didn't touch on yesterday. The amount of Bitcoin, I think it's 1.5% Wall Street have already sopped up in 60 days. Which is absolutely crazy when you think about it. So that comes with some inherent risks in the future if Bitcoin ever wanted to hard fork and upgrade and they were to own the majority of supply. So there's sort of some tail risks there that I'm not too worried about because I think at the end of the day, Wall Street wants to see the price of Bitcoin go up. So I don't think that they'd deliberately want to crush it basically at the end of the day, they're greedy and they care about making money from fees. So I don't think that's a huge worry, but yeah, what do you think about that?
No, I agree. I think for me, the thing that more concerns me is that if they get into too much profit in these early stages, they're going to rebalance portfolio. So like a lot of these times when these ETFs are getting put into other ETFs and people are just allocating 2 to 5% of that ETF in the Bitcoin ETF, if that weighting becomes too great, then they might recalibrate and sort of take some profit and bring that Bitcoin like exposure back down to 2 to 5% or whatever they're sitting at.
Yeah.
So, and we've never experienced like a Wall Street recalibration in price. So that's something I'm watching, probably not in the short term, but in the long term, it's something to factor.
And if that does happen, so if someone's initial allocation is 3% and they get in at $40,000 Bitcoin, say, and then it hits 80, so that becomes 6% of their portfolio, they're gonna sell half and rebalance. That's the basic idea. But if you think about big picture, that can actually create rather like a smoothing of the Bitcoin price. So rather than letting it go parabolic and go straight to 150, 200,000 US dollars, say, it's a bit more like the stock market where we just see this steady angle. There's a few dips along the way, sure, but it's more of a controlled rather than a blow off. And we just charge basically up and to the right for the next year or two and still hit those high prices eventually. But it's that institutional rebalancing, which is interesting. So other... anything to add to that?
No, yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, we don't know what this looks like. Like, you know, the whole crypto market cap is still only the market cap of NVIDIA. So, you know, this might be the last parabolic bull market for Bitcoin if it just gets so institutionalized. We don't know. We'll see what happens.
One other thing we didn't mention when Kyle and I were talking about the price of Bitcoin mining stocks, and they had a real leap, as if the smart money was saying, well, where can we get some beta, some outperformance here if Bitcoin's rallying? The other thing there is that Wall Street might want to only buy from miners. So in terms of legal and regulatory certainty, they can't risk buying 1,000 Bitcoin that might have been tainted or misused somewhere along its history, say. They might have to be buying 100% of the supply from these miners. And again, it's all just this cycle where miners might start charging a bit of a premium for coins that have no blockchain history, that are regulatory clean or whatever. So yeah, it's pretty exciting to see all this playing out.
They call it Virgin Bitcoin, isn't it? The ones that haven't been used. Yep.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Super interesting. We'll see where this happens. ETH obviously is the other interesting one. And so we've seen now from our team that's just been tracking some of the on-chain data that I think now we're at 2016 levels for the amount of ETH that's actually on exchanges. And so there could be a bit of a supply shock coming up here. Like, we see the ETH price has actually finally started to do something, but you can see exactly what's been happening here. 31,000 ETH burnt. You can see the supply tracker here from Bitcoin versus ETH, ETH being deflationary. So there's not a whole lot of ETH floating around either. And it's at, you know, what are we now? Like 8-year lows on exchanges. And so some of the rhetoric coming out of like people, especially people like Grayscale, that they're just like, they're going to fight this tooth and nail to get this ETH ETF off the mark as well. And especially once everyone's seen what the Bitcoin ETF has done, you can see that they know that they're going to make money on the ETH one as well, but we're already at really low levels on exchanges. So pretty interesting what's coming there for Ethereum too. I wouldn't sleep on Ethereum at the moment. There's probably some pretty violent moves coming there as well.
Yeah, so even in the last video, I think it was growing at a negative 0.5, and that's already increased in the past hour to negative 0.6. There was a comment saying, oh, well, the supply of ETH is unlimited. Well, in theory, it is, because they're always going to be paying the stakers out to secure the network. Now it's proof of stake. But the point is that they're only currently paying out 17,000 ETH a week to stakers, and there's been 31,000 ETH burnt, and that increases as we get into a bull market and more fees are paid. So those numbers there are what really is more important to watch than think about, well, there's in theory the supply is unlimited, but it doesn't really matter when the actual number is shrinking.
Yeah, we'll touch on that in a couple more slides as well, because you can see there's so many other factors with ETH that's not just like issuance versus burn. There's so many other factors compared to Bitcoin, where Bitcoin is still pretty sedentary. Like, it doesn't actually move to the same degree that ETH does. So, I mean, who knows what happens there? Like, I think we even hear like Eigenlayer obviously is the big play. And for those, this is pretty complicated for those that are relatively new here or haven't spent hours deep diving it. So what Eigenlayer is done, and we've got an article about this for members on the Nuggets News platform, but effectively, it allows people to stake their ETH, and they do receive a liquid staking token. But then this allows the Eigenlayer to then go and secure other parts of the ecosystem as well. And we've seen this with Lido, like Lido and their liquid staking token. Like now we're up to something like 33% of all ETH is either staked and liquid staked and restaked. Sorry, so restaking is the Eigenlayer, liquid staking is Lido. So it allows you to restake staked ETH. So you stake your ETH, you get given a liquid token, and then you can restake that liquid token to add security elsewhere and then also to receive more yield. So 33% of the supply now is staked and liquid staked, restaked. And this is getting pretty wild now.
Yeah, and you're saying it's like Is it similar to rehypothecation in the traditional, I guess, financial world, and does it have that element of Ponzi to it? Well, yes and no. I mean, as long as it's always one-to-one backed in each thing, the question becomes if one protocol fails or gets hacked and drains all the ETH out of it, and then there's liquidity for them to sell that somewhere else. And so in theory, they've lost some value that other protocols are relying on to be there. So you're not creating new ETH anywhere. It's more just the other, I guess, fringe dangers. Would you agree with that or?
No, 100%. It's just adding other hurdles that need to be jumped. And so there's other, I guess, things that could go wrong. If you imagine yourself, you're running 100-meter sprint, like hurdles, it's just another hurdle of something that could go wrong. Like, because now we're relying on other protocols as well, besides just the ETH protocol.
Yeah.
But like, if you can double yield, you can get yield from ETH. Like, effectively, ETH becomes what I think Raoul Paul again calls it, the internet bond. The fact that there's just like a base level of like of revenue, of yield that you can get on your ETH, but still be liquid and then do other things with it, and the ETH still becomes useful. Because you gotta think, every single time you do something with your asset and you stake it, you're taking away one of the features from it, and so what you're left over with is inherently less valuable, I guess you could say, for lack of a better word, because now you've taken the ability to stake that ETH away. But with liquid staking, it's now re-implanted that back in. So now your liquid staked derivative is just as useful as the original ETH, and you're gaining that yield from it. So yeah, it's wild what people come up with.
I'm trying to think of maybe a real world example for people to get their heads around. It might be, say, having a lot of money in a bank account where you can now get, say, 5% interest in a high interest savings account. And then people can go and say, well, I'm going to offset that in, you know, my mortgage or something, or I'm going to go offset that against the rental property when the rental property is giving me a 10% yield, using that capital that's also getting 5% yield. Something like that is, I guess, maybe an equivalent for those people coming from the traditional world.
Yeah, because it's still capital. And so it's still, but it's making the capital still useful. It's not getting tied up in one spot.
Yeah.
Like, liquid staking isn't just on the ETH network as well. So like, Stride is the liquid staking protocol for the Cosmos ecosystem. And this is pumped as well, like recently in price. And so if you've been involved here, there's been all sorts of airdrops, and anyone who'd been using Stride has done very well. The same thing with Solana and like Jito. So all I know, you know, one of the guys that works for us, he got a mortgage deposit straight just out of his rewards that he got out of Jito because the fact that he was liquid staking his Solana there.
This was one that I think a lot of members got, didn't it, when we covered in the possible airdrops guide or whatever pretty early on.
Yeah, so that was a juicy one. And I'm also looking here at Bifrost. So this is a relatively unknown one, but Bifrost is a Polkadot liquid staking protocol, but it doesn't just restrict you to just like Polkadot networks. You can actually also liquid stake ETH and a bunch of other, like Filecoin, Manta, which is now also an L2. It's a Polkadot parachain, but it's also an L2 on Ethereum. But the fact that you can liquid stake here at 17%, your DOT, it's not going to let me play around with me to connect a wallet, but you can liquid stake here, and then also you get issued VDOT or VETH or whatever it might be, and then you can go and then use that again in DeFi as well. Really, really interesting. There's already like $100 million plus staked in this protocol, and the market cap is only $20 million. So I would watch this if you haven't, because you look at Lido, you look at Stride, you look at Jito, they've all ripped. This one hasn't yet. 20 million market cap. So liquid staking protocol, I use this every day still. It's very useful.
There's some free alpha for everyone at home then, Bifrost.
We've got an article coming about it soon. Anyway, I guess moving on from that, unless you had any last comments on liquid staking. No,
that's fine. That's great.
The other one that I think is really interesting right now is, like, obviously we've gone through EIP 4844 at the moment, which is reducing the gas fees for all Ethereum L2s. And I think this is really interesting as well, because we potentially could see a little bit of like an L2 season coming, because some of these protocols now, their fees are about to be cut by 90%. And so anyone who now historically has said, oh, Ethereum sucks because it's just expensive or rich guy chain, is literally like, it's a redundant argument now. Like, you don't even have to touch the Ethereum mainnet anymore. You can just be using L2s, and they're going to be cheaper than cheap to use. Like we're talking like a matter of cents or fractions of a cent, depending on which L2 you're using.
Yeah.
And so the one that everyone's watching right now is Blast, because this is literally like a DJ casino right now. There's so much money moving into it. There's a whole bunch of airdrops that are coming. Some of them I think are about to get unlocked today. And so even just playing around on some of these, like in, you know, deploying capital and moving your ETH onto the L2s, playing around with some of the dApps, playing around with some meme coins, the airdrops have been outrageous. And I don't think that this is going to slow down. Like we've seen some stats, there's something like 5,000 different L2s under development. Now, obviously 98% of them are never going to see the light of day, but there's some serious, serious action that could happen on some of these tokens, these L2 tokens.
Yeah, great insight there.
I think one thing that like there was some commentary as well from the community was that like these are just governance tokens because you're not using them for gas. And yes, that is true, but you're using ETH as gas for most of them anyway. And that ETH that they generate just goes into the treasury of these protocols. And so holding the governance token effectively gives you a say in what happens with those proposals. And so we've just seen Optimism, second biggest total value locked. They just literally gave away 30 million OP tokens, which, you know, they're at $4 each at the moment. So over $100 million they just gave away to people in their ecosystem and their community because they literally are just so flush with cash right now. And they're just trying to continue to grow that. So I would say that there's the probability of a bit of an ETH L2 season coming as well.
Yeah, and that all that money that they're flush with that they're paying out helps develop new projects and get people interested. And the same thing is going to happen in the Bitcoin Layer 2 world. You know, some people saying, oh, what are the tokenomics that great? And I guess the counter argument is, well, they don't really need to be. You know, Optimism and Arbitrum and these projects don't really have the greatest tokenomics of all time compared to all the projects in crypto. But if they're, you know, paying, if they flush with cash, they're paying out rewards, they're giving airdrops to token holders of that ecosystem, there's so many reasons to hold it.
Well, look at Uniswap. Like Uniswap, how many years has Uniswap been around for now? Like 6?
Yeah.
And they literally only this week have just turned on fee sharing with their token. Like up until now, all it has literally been is just a voting token.
Yeah.
And like the value that people have like squabbled over for that is outrageous. So that some of these things can do some wild things. This is crypto, but there is an economic model to holding these tokens, and they do have value because you do have a control in that network and the revenue isn't just hoarded. It is shared with the community.
Yeah.
Moving on. The other interesting one at the moment is ERC 404. I don't know if you've seen much of this already.
Is this, is it a layman's explanation for people at home, like fractionalizing ownership of NFTs and that kind of thing?
Yes. So let's say you've got an NFT which is worth $1,000. Traditionally, a lot of people wouldn't want to buy a $1,000 NFT because what does it do? But now what ERC 404 is going to allow is that you can tokenize that NFT. And effectively, the NFT does kind of get locked or destroyed, and it gets reissued as tokens. And so those tokens can then be added to, you know, exchanges or to Uniswap liquidity pools or wherever it might be. And so I don't foresee this being just because, you know, you want to own one millionth of like a JPEG picture or a profile picture. I see this as being like those NFTs will be representative of something tangible, like a real estate piece of property or some sort of like, rights to something. Like we can get a lot more creative here because that can now be fractionalized, the ownership. And while the asset is held by the NFT, and then it can be traded and owned by token holders. So pretty interesting. These are the projects here. If you go to CoinGecko and you look at ERC 404, there's already a bunch of these that have already started to, you know, get some traction. The biggest one being Pandora, already at a $229 million market cap. So this is pretty wild stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm thinking about decentralizing something like Airbnb, where you can have the ownership of the property and split that up into 52 pieces for 52 weekends of the year. You want to hire that out. And you know, there's so many ways you can use this fractionalized technology for ownership.
Yeah, actually, funny you mentioned that. I've actually seen that in practice where a hotel was tokenizing through NFTs every single night of their their hotel. And so people could just book out nights in hotels and get into the hotel night brokerage business, selling off nights. And the more desirable weekends, obviously, they would pump up. And if no one uses it, you lose it. So who knows where this goes? I don't think it just stops at artwork. I think NFTs have been pretty quiet so far. Admittedly, I'm not huge in the NFT space. I'm still pretty like rookie there personally, but I think that they've got some upside still. We haven't really seen that sort of lift yet this cycle.
Yeah, I think the Ethereum name service and all that will be one of the first sectors to really pop off when people get super interested in buying their name.eth or the numbers.eth, all those unique things in the next 6 to 12 months, yeah.
Next up, I think Arweave is worth a mention. I think it's up like 40% in the last 24 hours or something like that. For those, I guess, who don't know, again, we've done articles on this, but Arweave is a decentralized cloud service. So think like iCloud, except decentralized, and you can store data across a network of different computers.
For people at home, if they've seen some of that DPIN stuff in our marketing and on our socials recently, decentralized physical infrastructure. So replacing Google Cloud, Amazon Web Services with these decentralized ways of storing data or processing data, all that type of stuff.
Yeah. And they've been a really interesting play up until now. They've been around for a little while, but just yesterday they announced a new chain called AO. And so this is why the token has pumped so much. And this is really interesting because now they're playing in the interoperability world where they supposedly, you can watch, there's a video from their team that they've put out, but they've shipped a product now in testnet where it's a fully interoperable blockchain where you don't actually have to wait in a queue to execute transactions, but they can be executed simultaneously. And so they've changed the infrastructure and architecture of how, like, I guess a mempool would work. And how transactions are ordered for when you're trying to execute a transaction. And apparently it's fully interoperable with like the SVM on Solana, Bitcoin with the EVM. And so this is a really interesting one. And if this works, I could see that Arweave is going to make moves. This could get very interesting.
Yeah, well, this was one of our top picks a year or so ago in this sector. I think at the time they were doing data storage for Solana as well as Ethereum. But it's fascinating that they've launched a new protocol to sort of merge it all together by the sounds of things.
This is the holy grail that wars have been fought over in crypto already, where like interoperability and the interoperability play. I think now like the days are almost gone unless you've raised like hundreds of millions of dollars where you would launch a standalone chain that's secured by yourself or like a new validator set. Most projects now are either like building in one of the existing ecosystems, e.g. you're an ETH L2. I mean, we've even seen like BNB Chain has launched an ETH L2 using the Optimism stack. You use like the Cosmos SDK. So it's effectively you're taking a tech stack that already exists and you're making your own flavor of it. Chainlink CCIP is doing this, where Chainlink wants to actually link all blockchain or EVM blockchains together. So it's almost like you're using one chain. And this was the whole ethos originally of Polkadot as well, to be a layer zero, the layer zero project itself. So interoperability has been a huge narrative that so many people have tried to get right. And it's really interesting. I think that this cycle, we will achieve it. Everyone knows I'm very interested in the Polkadot ecosystem and what they've done with their new Polkadot 2.0 roadmap. They've allowed it so that they actually want to be an interoperability bridge between all the Ethereum L2s. So they would actually work as a layer zero for interoperability of Ethereum. Super interesting stuff. So, but yeah, I would pay attention to what AO does from Arweave.
Fantastic. And we might get into some more of that Polkadot stuff and some of the stuff you're doing that in a second. Do you have anything else before we get to that or?
No, I think that's probably about it for me. So you alluded to it just now. Full disclosure, I am on the founding team of this project, and so I'm hugely biased here in why I think that this is a good idea. But so I'm based over in Indonesia. I'm based in Bali, and so I have another founder, my partner. So what we've done over here is launch Mandala Chain. So what Mandala Chain effectively is doing is we've seen that like a lot of different countries have different economic systems for trying to interact with their government or with retail in like Web 2 type sort of things. So for example, like Estonia has their e-residency where you can actually vote on proposals all from your phone. You have a little card and you can, like, it's very, very tech savvy. I know in Australia we have like a web, application or a mobile application called MyGov where you can actually hook up all your tax services or your health services. But in most South Asian countries, this has been a hugely fragmented issue. And in Indonesia specifically, a lot of all the provinces won't data share with each other, and a lot of the other industries won't share data with each other. And so with Mandala Chain, we've actually signed agreements with several government agencies and departments already over in Indonesia to build the government services infrastructure. And so there's already about 8 different applications from government services that are building on the chain, from decentralized identification to health records, to banking records, to different like local government services and all of their bookkeeping and all of like their legal compliance. All being built on top of Mandala Chain. And the idea is that it will be a proof of concept that you can take to other countries as well. But Indonesia's already signed on. And what makes it interesting, I think, is that most existing blockchains, they're blockchain to customer. And so you're trying to get customers to use the chain. And so a blockchain effectively works like a shopping center or a mall where you and you're trying to get dApps, which are the shops, to come and open up inside you. But most malls have like a key tenant, whether that's like a Kmart or a Target or, you know, some sort of department store, to try and bring attraction in. Well, Mandala Chain, the key tenant will be government services. And so anyone who's wanting to deploy like a DEX or a game or an NFT marketplace, you know that there'll already be users, and there's, you know, 280 million Indonesian users that will be using the chain because they need it for government services. So we've got a lot of builders who are building at the moment, like a lot of like normal sort of consumer facing dApps that'll come on. So yeah, this is something that we're building at the moment.
And you got the Polkadot grant the other day, or?
Yeah, so at the moment it's in auction to become a Polkadot parachain. It'll be an EVM chain, so it'll be fully Ethereum compatible, just will connect into your MetaMask as an EVM wallet. But again, needing security to be more than just a couple of like federated nodes that got set up. So it's leading at the moment for a Polkadot parachain slot auction. There's already been over $1 million of Polkadot committed to it. But this is likely to go mainnet in Q3. There'll be a token which trades with it. But yeah, some interesting stuff we're building over with the Indonesian government, that's for sure.
Fantastic, mate. Well, I'll stop that screen sharing. That's yeah, that's awesome to get so tight with the government. And as you said, you can onboard hundreds of millions of users pretty quickly when the government make everyone use something in these countries that are pretty mobile friendly.
Yeah, it's super cool to see what's happening in South Asia. So like, we obviously see a lot of stuff which happens from the region, and like Vietnam is going nuts, Philippines going nuts, like in cool ways where I think they think that they can sort of skip out a lot of the infrastructure that a lot of Western countries already developed. So a lot of these unbanked countries, instead of like having to go now bank all of their countries, they're thinking, well, maybe we can skip this step and we can just go straight to like a blockchain Web3 type sort of solution, and they can just leapfrog a whole sector that they were maybe underdeveloped in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, awesome. All of us who are blockchain native people hope that something like that happens.
Yes, exactly. Well, guys, that's been a fantastic chat. I've enjoyed that. Good luck with that, Michael. As always, head over to the website for all the info. And if you do become a member, you can see all this research we're putting out daily, all the portfolios with what coins we're most bullish on and sectors and so on. Any final thoughts, Michael?
Nah, everyone, just stay safe out there. And yeah, just make sure you don't get too carried away with crazy Bitcoin pumps.
Enjoy the bull market, yeah. All the links to follow Michael and our socials down below, guys. Otherwise, hit that like button, subscribe if you haven't already, share the video around, and we'll talk to you again soon. Cheers.